Hey everybody, two quick things before we get this week's show going on. If you have not done so yet, go to 288 and 289. Those are our two parts of our Google I.O. podcast special, almost 3 hours of podcast from last week's Google I.O. So really important, a lot of good stuff in there. This week, we have another two-parter in one podcast, I guess. Part one, we've got Renee Ritchie and Russell Holly. They weren't at Google I.O., obviously. But I want to hear from them because they have some really good thoughts on what was announced and important for you to hear. In part two, we have Mike Wolfson. He does our Android Central app and all of our other Mobile Nations apps on Android and has done some other big apps in the past. And he is a developer and was at Google I.O. So I really wanted to hear what he had to say from a developer perspective, just because that's different. So coming up right now, Renee Ritchie, Russell Holly, Mike Wolfson. Stay tuned. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode 290 for Thursday, May 26th, 2016. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nicholson. I am back from Google I.O., and we're giving everybody else the week off this week. Jerry is exhausted. Alex is exhausted. Andrew is exhausted. Who else do we sometimes have on the podcast? No, that was it. That was it for those of us who were there. 3 days in the sun with a lot of developers and a lot of sun. And did I mention there was sun? It was pretty hot out. And I'm from Florida, and I tend to forget how sitting in the sun for 12 hours will just exhaust you. So we're doing a couple things differently this week, and we're going to start with part one with Russell Holly, who is here.
Hello.
I'm sorry you weren't with us last week. We missed you.
I'm almost sorry that I wasn't with you. But then I remember that, like, sometimes I forget to drink water and get dehydrated at indoor events. So, yeah, you all would have just hauled me out on a stretcher at this event, I think.
I didn't see that happen, and there were no announcements to beware of the brown acid, but it was wild. And we've got Renee Ritchie here as well. Renee was obviously paying attention to everything that was going on and has some unique thoughts and ideas on all that. And actually, I mean, there was a good bit of Apple talk at this thing as well.
It was like half an Apple event, Phil.
Actually, now that I said Apple talk, we should pimp your other podcast you just started.
Oh, yeah, totally. Apple Talk with Michael Gartenberg, who up until last year worked for Phil Schiller as senior marketing director at Apple, and previous to that was at Microsoft and Gartner, that's the right one. Serenity Caldwell, myself, and rotating guests. We had Horace Dedya on last week to talk about cars, and we're having Carolina Milanese on this week to talk about virtual assistants.
Russell, you noticed they haven't had either of us on yet.
You're on the list.
So congrats on that. That's cool. No, I wanted to hear from you guys about what we basically went through and all the different things. And there are a lot of ideas that came out of I.O. that are kind of cross-pollinating again. And Google has made no secrets about basically wanting to run on all the platforms and rule all the platforms at this point, which I think is smart.
It's a great way to, you know, to kind of push the objective that it felt like they started, 5 years ago now, which was to have, you know, kind of all of their products under a single banner that looked the same and functioned the same and you know, just kind of existed everywhere. But there have been so many stumbles along the way that it didn't feel like it was ever going to get there. And this series of announcements really feels like the closest they've gotten.
Well, let's talk about those announcements. I guess you kind of have to do them in order. They don't quite work. Google Assistant, which to me really just seems like an extension of Google Now and the whole search and response thing, right?
It looks super interesting to me for two reasons. One is I've been begging to be able to type into these things for years because there's just some social situations where you can't yell at your phone. It's just not acceptable or possible. And to be able to type and get access to that those same kinds of engines and those same kind of results is great. But the whole thing kind of struck me as super smart from Google's perspective because all these companies are in business. I mean, they do great things for us, but they've got to make money and pay their employees. And Google, and at Google's type of business, you need scale for that. And right now, messaging is super, super hot. And it's not clear that Google's dominating that or has really big scale on that. So if they can leverage what's unique about them, and that's their engine and their technology and their natural language and their inference, then they have a shot at maybe overcoming some of WhatsApp's lead or some of the other messaging services' leads.
An assistant kind of seems like the first public utterance of machine learning results for Google search appliance, for just anything and everything we do, right?
Yeah, so we got a little bit of this last year at I.O. when they started talking, really for the last 2 years at I.O., when they started talking about, you know, the application of knowledge engines and things like that, you know, this whole big data setup. And a lot of things, I think, it gets brushed over pretty easily because it ends up being kind of a series of buzzwords when you kind of hear the stuff. But what we're seeing now is, you know, the practical application of that stuff.
What is, all right, so for somebody who doesn't know what the hell we're talking about, what is machine learning versus Google just being really smart and figuring out the answer and repeating it back to us?
The core of machine learning is taking, you know, a series of answers to the same question and taking the averages and applying them to something else. So, you know, Google operating it at the scale that they're able to operate at, they can ask a single question and get, you know, let's say 500,000 answers. And from that single question, they can determine what a large group of people actually want the answer to be from that question, from that sample. And they can just repeat that over and over and over again until they have, you know, samples that they can use to kind of, you know, narrow down these answers so that they can start answering questions before you're actually asking them.
And it's super cool, too, because the way they do this technology, like Russell and I could get the same sort of, we could ask the same question, get an answer, pick different versions of those. And because they have such a massive scale, they can start figuring out why we pick different ones and then adjusting those based on, you know, the exact wording you use or where you're located or what's around your vicinity or what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And it makes it not just, it's not just the lowest common denominator, because I think some people confuse it with, you know, mass knowledge gathering to find the lowest common denominator, but it really is a massively powerful, very selective filter, almost like a butterfly effect.
So generally speaking, we have Google and Google now Google Assistant. Apple, we have Siri, and that's just kind of the overarching name for that, right?
Yep.
Amazon has Echo. Well, Echo is the appliance. Alexa is sort of the brains behind it and the personification of it. Microsoft has Cortana. Is there anyone I'm forgetting? That's,
I don't know what Facebook calls theirs, but they're massive on machine learning.
Yeah, no, that's true. Facebook and the Knowledge Graph. And yeah. So Google Assistant leads into Google's first appliance for this, which, yes, will directly compete with Amazon Echo, which is kind of the short, boring answer to that. But Google Home is this tiny little, and it's surprisingly small, speaker appliance thing. And I really want to know how much this is going to cost, because it's so small. I got to think it's going to be relatively inexpensive and maybe not sound the best thing in the world.
What does an Echo cost? Because I don't know, because they won't sell them here.
$200.
Yeah. Okay.
And Google Home can't be more than $200. It's just
I wouldn't
not going to
so.
Happen.
I think it's going to be less.
I think it would shock me if it was $100. But you know, given they're positioning it as this kind of accessory for the stuff that Google already has in your home, like Chromecast or you know, the Chromecast Audio, or you know, some of the your Android phone or your iPhone and stuff like that. So you know, $100 would be kind of like this really super ideal sweet spot, and Google can certainly do it even if it costs more. But it's I really feel like that $200 mark is probably appropriate.
They sort of made it to look like and I'm saying this in the nicest way, sense of the word. They sort of made it look like a commodity. They didn't make it look like a one of a kind thing that you're willing to pay $1,000 for once, right, and put in your thing. They made it look like something that you could put in every room in your house and, yeah, you know, not break the bank.
I thought it kind of played off the weird round bubble self-driving cars a little bit. Maybe that's just the color.
And the shapes and the color for that starter thing are kind of similar.
Which obviously was in my brain because we were seeing them all over the place out there. But yeah, it's a cutesy. It's a little more warm and homey versus the just Amazon Echo looks to me like the probe in Star Trek 4. That's exactly what it looks
like. It's this industrial pillar. And that's look at Amazon's design language for everything. Their tablets, their attempt at a Fire Phone, like all of their hardware is this very industrial, you know, kind of sharp lines. If anything, the Echo is the most human product that they've made as far as design goes, because it's not a bunch of jagged edges. You know, it's this round pillar. But yeah, very industrial look to all of Amazon's products. And Google did a really interesting job in making this look very personable. Like Renee said, it's something that could be in every room in the house.
It could be a Procter & Gamble product.
You just kind of ignore it. It's just a thing that's there, but also available in a bunch of different colors, mm-hmm, and something that you can very quickly swap out to something else, which we've seen already with OnHub.
My big question about this, and I've written about it, we've talked about it on the podcast before, is are they going to be able to personify, or do they even want to personify this sort of thing instead of making it just this engineerific appliance that you talk at instead of talk to? I think that's where Amazon has really killed it. Now, Renee, in the past 24 hours, we've had more rumors of Apple getting into this game coming up soon.
Yeah, I mean, Apple's been working on this for a while, and if anyone's familiar with the Apple TV, I don't want to call it debacle, but basically the Apple TV was supposed to be refreshed, and then they just kept changing their minds on what it should be, and at some point it was a DVR, at some point it was a Home Assistant, at some point it was this magical box that would sit there and pre-download all your backups and do all this wonderful networking stuff for you, and eventually it ended up being a version of the Apple TV that ran apps and had
Siri. All that's kind of relatively easy to do technology-wise. It's just they got to figure out how best to do it, right?
Yeah, totally. So I guess it was unclear, because they have this massive corporate stigma against things. Like, they don't want an open microphone, so they make you press down the button when you speak to Siri, but you don't have to do that on the latest iPhones. You can just talk to them, so then you're not clear whether you should be doing it or not, or why one is one way and the other is the other way. They can do a lot with local data, combining it with cloud data, but I think they've got to just figure out as a company what they're comfortable doing within the house and then go towards it in a unified manner.
Do you think it's lazy to just call everything at this point an Amazon Echo competitor and not think that one of these things can stand on its own?
Yeah,
not totally. Any more or less lazy than we call everything that comes out an iPhone competitor. I mean, sure. The product cabinet category was defined by this first product. So it makes sense to use that as a point of comparison.
I think, like, all these companies have been working on this stuff for a while. It's no coincidence that we had a bunch of new really great smartphones like iPhone and Android and webOS, and all of that sort of came out around, you know, similar periods of time. Amazon got first to market. First to market doesn't always win. In fact, doesn't often win. So I'm super curious to see what a company of Google's scale can do with this, especially, and I keep saying this, I'm a broken drum, Amazon is solving a problem for Americans who speak English, and I really want a problem solved for people outside America that speak a variety of languages. And if Google can do that, more power to them.
And it seems like people have forgotten that Apple doesn't generally do things first anyway.
Never. The watch is the earliest thing they've ever done. They waited 10 years to get into phones and tablets. The watch, they waited, I think, what, two years, 3 years?
And I think this will only help it all improve. And I think in any event, this first generation is still very much early days in this sort of product.
They benefit from each other in that Apple usually waits and then comes up with a very good interface for things, but they can't do that unless they wait and watch and see what everyone else has done. And then some other companies will take that and sort of go, okay, this interface works really well. And then we get a quasi-standard, and which is good for all of us. Like, I think sometimes when people complain about, and I've done my fair share of this, people copying from each other, ultimately, consistency is a user-facing feature. It's a benefit.
Well, we've got this huge mess now of all these home connectivity standards, and if everybody has a standard, then nobody has a standard. At some point, and I guess maybe that's where I think Amazon has really crushed it. Every week, they send out an email of saying, here's what we added this week. And I don't know what any of the protocols any of these things is using, and I don't care. I don't want to know. I just want it to work. Do you think Google and Apple are going to appropriately keep things that open, or are we going to be stuck in HomeKit? Are we going to be stuck in whatever the hell Google's calling it stuff this week? I didn't hear one single mention of Brillo and Weave last week, by the way.
No, and you're not going to, because that was an approach for developers. When the actual products come out, you're not going to hear protocol names. When that stuff comes out, it's just going to be stuff that connects to your home, that works over Wi-Fi and that works with this stuff. And so that's going to be how that works. And what Apple's doing with HomeKit, I still, commend them for taking this really slow trudge, because the very first step was, hey, y'all are encrypting your stuff, right? And 200 companies in the Internet of Things went, sure, in the next generation. And so everything just kind of slowed to a crawl so that we could, take these connected home things and actually make them safe. But it's an interesting push, to have all of this connected home stuff just sort of work. And that's the thing that has been necessary. And to have these weird little pillars, regardless of who makes them, be the thing that makes that work is kind of fascinating, because in the previous generation, we were all told that, you need to have this thing plugged into your router. And then you need to manually connect everything to it, and then it will all work together through a single app. And this, I don't ever use the Alexa app on my phone for anything.
Or Chromecast app.
And the Amazon Echo just, I give the command and it works. And so I don't ever use the Alexa app for anything. And I would love that's the thing that's most important to me about how Google is approaching this is to create an environment where all of this stuff works without an app, without a screen, without a keyboard. It's great that we have those functions when we need them, like Assistant, Renee saying being able to type into Assistant and have it work. The only one that was doing that so far was Cortana, And so, you know, to be able to have that is really impressive. But, you know, ultimately to be able to use all of it without a screen is the thing that makes the Echo so powerful.
What about this open thread thing that was announced by Nest? Is that just one more standard or one more protocol? Is it so new we haven't read up on it yet? Should have given you warning. Sorry.
No, I got distracted by Tony Fadell throwing something. I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, it's this. I mean, it's not a new thing. It's been around for a little while, but it's like, yeah, I mean, to me, it's just, all right, here's one more thing. And I have no idea what it's going to work with.
So my thing is that, like, if we could do something just as an end user, like I'm comfortable with the way CarPlay and Android Auto works because almost every manufacturer supports both of them. So then to me, it doesn't matter. Like there's almost like a layer of abstraction. They have their pipes in the background. I get an interface that I'm familiar with. And if all this home stuff is like that, if I can just walk in and I have a little device and, you know, Apple probably won't do this, but Google probably will. And that might make it a competitive advantage where it recognizes whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone or anything. And then suddenly my stuff just works. It knows it's me and it knows like what music I like, what movies I have available. And it just handles that for me and I don't have to worry about what those pipes are.
Is the ecosystem dying? Is that what it is?
No, it's just it's living without that human interface. You know, it has to be something that is actually automatic and actually running in the background, you know, so that it picks all this stuff up and works. And that was the most important demonstration from home for me was the announcement where the kid walked up and said, you know, play this thing on the living room. And it just immediately sent all that information to the Chromecast and started working. And that to me is kind of what Renee is talking about now, where, you know, he has walked in and his, you know, video catalog is accessible and his music catalog is accessible. And it just immediately, you know, transfers that information to the stuff that's connected to the home without, you know, the need for a separate authentication or, you know, the need to open up an app and connect to things. You know, and we've got all of these disparate pieces to do that. You know, Chromecast already has a guest mode that'll work with just you know, an audible connection, and to have all of that, you know, just kind of interoperate would be a really ideal thing. But I'm not convinced that that's going to work out of the box. I think the biggest thing from all of Google's announcements was that everything was coming soon, and that was weird.
All this being said, we have no. I mean, we know so little about home at this point.
Right.
We don't know when it's coming. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know exactly what all it's going to do and what it's going to talk to. A little sooner this summer will be Allo and Duo, two more messaging things from Google. Where do we stand on this, Russell?
As long as Hangouts is stuffed into a very shallow grave and covered up, and we never talk about it again, then that's awesome. If Google actually keeps Hangouts around and then Allo and Duo are doing their thing, then I have a really serious problem because Hangouts was really great as a concept, unifying all the messaging stuff, doing it all and actually working. We never got there. You know, they never finished Hangouts as far as I'm concerned. And so, you know, burn it all down and start over. Awesome. But do not keep them around.
I was really kind of looking at this as sort of an open source cross-platform, hopefully FaceTime replacement for me. And I mentioned this on the other half of the podcast we'll hear after this, I love how they pull, you know, 5,000 to 7,000 people out of their homes, you know, thousands of miles away from home, and then show them this way to talk to their loved ones. And
Right. Everyone's,
yes, this is great. It's perfect. It's going to be awesome. We have no idea if it's going to be great and perfect and awesome. but we all, you know, they tug at our emotions like that. I mean, Renee, FaceTime is great. I use FaceTime when I'm on the road because it works better than just about anything. My wife is on an iPhone. My kids can grab the iPad whenever it's, you know, just laying around, and I can call and know pretty much that I'm going to get a hold of one of them. Hangouts is a little different. I mean, I don't think this is going to be a FaceTime replacement because it's still one more app you have to onboard people to. But I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, I mean, FaceTime is great in that they integrated, almost like with iMessage, integrated into the existing app. So if you're using the phone or you're using SMS, you're using their services as well. It's interchangeable. The big problem FaceTime had is very early, Steve Jobs got on stage and said, we're going to make this an open standard. And his engineers said, what? And then they started looking at it and they got sued by Vertimax, which basically said, this is all our stuff. And they were sued in Texas, which is never good for any company. So like 4 years and four lawsuits later, FaceTime hasn't gone anywhere. It's no conference mode, no cross-platform mode. They've had to re-architect everything so it goes through relay servers. And it's unclear to me how, you know, how that's going to go forward. It works great, but what is the future for that? And if Google can take some of that and make something that's cross-platform that works as well and as easily as FaceTime, It is another app, but it might be something compelling. And on Android, at least, it could be a first-class citizen. And that's a really big head start for them.
That's Duo. And it's got this...
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
Yeah. Allo is just the messenger. And Duo has this really cool or scary feature, depending on how you look at it. And I don't think it's going to be spying on you, where you can see the person calling before you actually hit, you know, before you actually pick up, which, Russell, did you write it? Well, you should theoretically get rid of some of the handoff issues that we've seen in lag and connecting, but also just gives you a quick look at who's there and what they're doing and whether you actually want to talk to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest problem with any video chat service that isn't, you know, being used by people who are already familiar with the technology is that anytime there's something wrong, you have to start over. And that's really confusing to people who are unfamiliar with the way that technology works. And so it's, you know, unless you have people who are like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to use FaceTime, or we're going to sit down and we're going to use Hangouts, and that agreement has already happened on both sides, then, you know, that nobody uses video chat in any other situation, you know. And so Duo feels like an attempt to make it so that you can just up and call someone through video chat, and you know, you don't need that kind of, you know, almost like a meeting space set up already for people to sit down and use it. And that could be really cool. And the way that they have it set up, you know, where you can that knock knock thing where you can see the video as it comes in, while it's this kind of cutesy thing that lets you see people, you know, the videos, commercials and stuff are going to make it really cute. The fact that it's taking that time before you answer the call to make sure that the video stream is solid before you answer is the thing that's actually functional there. And that's really important.
And let's be clear, it's generally not going to be cute kids looking at you. It's going to be somebody just kind of staring off into space.
Be a lot of, the first day, it's going to be a lot of penises, Phil. That's why I hope I can turn it off. No, because like that's all Apple Watch doodles were. That's all Snapchats were. It's like we know people in the tech industry. They are going to be obsessed with that for the first day and a half.
Was it rule 42 on Reddit, I
think? Yeah. Probably. Right on your home screen. Bam.
Allo is, and again, A-L-L-O, which I say is Russian for hello, because I took Russian.
It's a famous Allo, magazine here, Allo.
There you go. Allo is messaging app, sort of in the ilk of WhatsApp, I guess. It's going to be based off your phone number, which is interesting, and not a Google account. I'll be curious to see if they give you other options for onboarding yourself, though, than just your phone number.
You're going to have to be able to tie in your Google account.
I think so.
You're going to have to be able to merge over your existing contacts.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if it also tried to reach in, you know, because this is going to be launching on iOS and Android at the same time. Mm-hmm. It would be nice, and maybe I don't understand quite how this works, but if there was a way to pull in iOS contacts, like as you create the account, you know, instead of just relying on a phone number, you know, to have that user database there.
Yeah, it's usually just a pop-up, and you say, can I use your contacts? And it says,
or
yeah,
Facebook,
and it's all
and yeah.
So, absolutely. I mean, if you know, that onboarding thing, it should be pretty smooth the way both iOS and Android work right now, and you know, even without a phone number.
I mean, not having seen that much of it, on one hand, it's just one more app to use, or to use instead of this one other app, but we've got so many chat apps we have to use anyway. Does one more really matter that much, or do we just like complaining about it?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, as I sit here and stare at Skype, Slack, Hangouts, and Facebook Messenger all open on my screen at the same time. That's actually an interesting, now that I think about it, we have not heard a single word about desktop clients for any of this.
Nope.
Mobile first. Not even web clients. What's interesting to me is that it's that virtual real estate is for a company of Google or Facebook size, it's essentially free. They can make as many of these as they want. But if you translate that, like Russell, here's your Skype garden and here's your Slack garden, and you've got to tend those. Oh, now here's your Snapchat garden. Right. And you're busy over there. Now this one starts dying, but people are complaining. Russell, your Skype garden doesn't look very good anyway. I got to come back. Oh, where's your Instagram garden? And like they just keep adding these things to us, and it's huge amounts of overhead. But almost like, especially in the industry, you're considered a pariah if you're not totally competent at keeping all of them up to date all the time.
Yeah.
Old man Phil looks at the stickers and the doodles and just cringes. I'm not going to understand a damn thing my kids are trying to tell
me. Angry man yelling at the bots.
It's all, you know, Facebook and WhatsApp, you know, competing with those two services with that feature. And I looked at it and went, okay, so those exist. But then I showed that part of the presentation to my kids and they were just like, oh, I can make the text big.
I have to stop and tell them, use words. Yeah. I don't know what you're saying.
14 emojis is not a way to ask me if you can go to the mall.
Yeah.
Going back to pictographs is amazing.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's super interesting the way that it is all structured, because some of the demos, they're super interesting, but some of them you're like, oh, I just want curry when I get home. And I know that it's not going to be that easy. Like if Renee asks for it, it's going to be, which do you want, Thai curry or Indian curry, green curry or yellow curry? Do you want to drive at 7 o'clock or something? And I'm going to be typing, no, I just want curry. You're supposed to assist. Okay, curry coming. But what? No, from where? I want to be like, I don't know how my relationship's going to be with these bots yet. Like, it's going to be setting up preferences beforehand.
I'm trying to decide
if
it's going to be better or worse than my relationships with other people.
But it's just like, you know, so this, we were joking about this because I was in the South Bay the same time you were, and I was at the bars, and there were a bunch of Google engineers there, and we were joking about it.
Thanks for inviting me, by the way.
You were busy with the other engineers. they were all like, we were just joking about it, and it was like, yeah, so if mother-in-law calls, you know, you can't like not have her as a content, but you could just say, hey, bot, entertain mother-in-law for 5 minutes. And it'll instead of offering you the suggestions, it'll just start doing them, and you'll be able to say, like, just don't let her add any appointments. Like, don't let her sign me up for anything. But then at some point, does mother-in-law decide, okay, you're kind of tedious, bot, engage, and then suddenly these two bots are talking while you're just going on with your life, but you think you still have a relationship?
I think you just called my mother-in-law a bot.
Oh, you have to do testing.
There's a lot to learn. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to learn here. That's assuming anybody uses it in the first place. I'll be really curious to see, and I don't know if we'll ever get numbers, but can they poach from WhatsApp? And especially in emerging markets. I mean, we're talking on, you know, a lot of data moving back and forth, and that's been the key to a lot of these apps, is by being really lightweight.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, and that's the thing. That's why there's a lot of people are asking why Allo and Duo are separate apps. And that right there is the answer. You know, because together they form a giant app that isn't going to run on the lowest form of Android phones very well. But just Allo alone should be, you know, lightweight enough that it would run fine on everything.
And we've seen, you know, Hangouts running on iOS has never quite been as smooth as we would like.
Getting better, but yeah, I mean, it's hard. Cross-platform is hard. We all want it, but it really is hard. The thing that's interesting, though, is like for Google, again, this is business. They need to be in the messaging space, and they've tried. They've tried over and over. Like, we're joking about how many they are, but they're not just doing them just to do them. They're doing them because they really need to have a massive presence in messaging. And right now, especially with Messenger and with WhatsApp, that's a lot of that's going to Facebook, and that's data going to Facebook and machine learning going to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And that's Google's bread and butter. They need that. So they have to offer a service that is good enough, that is compelling enough, that it gets people onto their platform. Because Google was great. They owned the internet. But as we're seeing even in our business, Facebook is owning social. And you count in Instagram, you count in WhatsApp. It's owning social to a staggering degree. And that's all data. That's us giving information and typing in. And the more data they get, the less Google gets. So they need these things to succeed. And they need to offer us awesome services that, you know, I can't do this in WhatsApp. Therefore, I'm going to go do it in Allo.
And you don't have to get all the people. You just have to get enough of them.
Yeah.
What about one of the first reactions anytime Google announces anything at this point is, oh, that's great, they're going to kill it in 2 years. Is that just knee-jerk annoyances?
Or? Look, I mean, that's the pace at which Google iterates. And, mm-hmm. and you can either love it or hate it, but the end result is always something that comes out that suits the needs of the people that they're targeting. And that may not always be you, but that's, you know, you're not Google's target audience for that product. And so you go and look for something else. That's just how that works. And you know, there are different and maybe better ways of doing that, but you have to step into this knowing that that's how Google operates and how they've operated for a really long time.
And they haven't made it a secret either.
No.
No.
If you don't know by now that Google will kill things that not enough people use from a, you know, to make sense from their standpoint, then that's just life. And that, you know, that's true with everything. Restaurants close all the time.
Yeah, but it's an equation too. Like Google has we've got a lot of faith in Google, but at some point you're like, I don't know if I want to invest in this because it might shut down in a year. And so they've got to carefully balance whiz-bang new features with our people's sort of getting new app fatigue, new service fatigue.
And I think some of that maybe just comes down to communications problems that Google continues to have.
We guarantee we will not shut this down for 2 years. So please go ahead and use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Spaces is a perfect example. Like they rolled out Spaces, which is really just harvesting collections from Google Plus.
I still don't know what that is.
It's collections, you know, from Google Plus. That's really all it is. And, you know, it's a cool idea for making, you know, the idea of having a conversation around a separate topic, you know, something that works. But it's not something I'm ever going to bother using for two reasons. One, I don't need another echo chamber. And two, there's nothing about this product that you know says that it's going to be around forever. You know, so building a massive community inside of yet another, like Renee was saying, building another garden is just not something that interests me. You know, around a single topic.
So the one thing that's super interesting to me, I don't know, you guys might have told me this, so if I'm repeating it back to you, just tell me to shut up, but that Spaces was an internal project that was being used for stuff inside Google, and someone looked at it and said, well, you know, why don't we ship this? Oh, but the keynote's already, you know, full up. Well, then just ship it now. And they're like, oh, went from someone built it because it was super cool to we're going to ship this, because Google is really like a product management driven company, the way Apple's sort of like a design management driven company, and they will just do things because they internally make sense, but there's no sort of greater vision balancing those things out at times.
Yeah, it's certainly possible.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we really talked about and saw. I mean, Android apps on Chrome OS, Russell, that's near and dear to your heart.
I love this whole idea. This is something that has been a long time coming, and may actually get me to pick up a newer Chromebook to use, really. And this is until Apple finally gets up off their ass and takes the MacBook Pro and releases the dark gray version that they made for the MacBook, I'm gonna switch to something else, because my current MacBook is dying. But that gray MacBook is so damn pretty, and I want one for you know, my needs. So I can't get the smaller MacBook.
Wait a few weeks.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Like, I really am. But yeah. So it's, you know, the whole idea behind Chrome OS running these native apps really appeals to me, because it removes the only limitation that I had to using a Chromebook for everything, which was, you know, something simple for photo editing and something simple for video editing. And I can do both of those things inside of Android apps, but it's really awkward to do on my phone or on my tablet. And so I'm a huge fan of the direction that Google's going with this.
Is there Facebook had this moment a couple of years ago where they realized they just couldn't do everything in web apps. They had to have native code running. And it feels to me that, you know, Google has gotten there now that they have the instant apps, and now that they have Android apps running on Chrome, that there's just the promise of really high performance web apps was always coming and never arriving. And now we're getting these hybrids that use really great web services, but give us a native wrapper for performance.
I said it a long time ago, back when BlackBerry was stealing Android apps. Yes, I said it. Yes, I said it. And then Microsoft kind of started doing the same thing. At what point do Android apps just become apps?
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, iOS doing its iOS stuff. And I don't think it's missing out, because they did so well from the get-go on that. But for everybody else, it's just an app. It's like you said, it's just a wrapper.
A while ago, it's basically embedded Linux for the next generation.
Kind of, yeah.
It's like a unified platform.
Well, and it's also important to remember when it comes to Chrome OS that the Google made the realization that you know, web apps alone weren't going to be enough a couple years ago. But their first effort was to try and work with these companies to do what was basically like streaming the hardware from somewhere else, like with Photoshop. They wanted to do a version of Photoshop and a version of Lightroom that ran on Chrome OS that basically, you know, pulled hardware from elsewhere to you know, virtualize it basically in order to do all the heavy lifting. And it just wasn't realistic. There wasn't a real way to do that. But the Facebook, the Photoshop Android and iOS apps are just incredible now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're so remarkably capable, and so it just makes way more sense to have those available.
I can do three streams of 4K on an iPad version of iMovie, and I can't even do that on the MacBook.
Yeah.
Let's talk about virtual reality for a minute. This one's near and dear to Russell's heart. Yay! Can we talk about Russell's project yet or no?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah? Russell, what are you working on?
So we're going to be launching a new website. It's going to be called VR Heads. It's going to be all virtual reality stuff all the time, and we're going to be doing just an incredible amount of stuff, exploring how this whole space is taking shape and how the industry is working. It's just going to be so much fun.
That you're not excited about it.
Yeah, I know, right? it's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it. And a big part of that is going to be now Daydream from Google, which is not a replacement to Google Cardboard, but kind of a step above.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be in between Cardboard and maybe above Gear VR as well, I guess. And we're not entirely sure yet, because they're kind of giving us these rough standards for, you know, hardware standards for what's going to run this stuff. But they were, I think, purposely vague about whether it's just going to be a phone and a visor or a phone connected to a visor. Did you get that feeling?
It's definitely going to be a phone and a visor. They were vague about it during the initial presentation, but then they cleared it up a lot during the seven different sessions that they had. And basically,
the VR ones are the only sessions I've not watched yet. I spent the past 3 days going through them all.
There's a tremendous amount of information within those sessions, you know, that clarifies a lot of the stuff that got announced. But basically, this is going to sit I think side by side with the Gear VR, in that it's going to be, you know, a powerful phone with a very capable display and some impressive head tracking stuff that's going to sit inside something that is a little more advanced than Google Cardboard in its shape and comfort. But then it's going to have this separate controller. It's going to be mandatory to have this separate controller that is going to work in theory similar to the HTC Vive, but it's going to have 3 degrees of freedom instead of 6 degrees of freedom, which means you're going to be able to move kind of up and back and left and right and around a little bit, but you're not going to be able to move forward and back and see those differences as far as motion. But you'll have a controller that you can operate in the physical world and have it represent itself in the virtual world. And that's something that we don't have in smartphones yet, but it's something that should be fairly trivial for Samsung to add. So that's why I say that it's, you know, kind of a step beside the Gear VR instead of a step above, because these experiences should be, in a year, very, very similar.
When you look at these raw specs that they're putting out, you know, here's the sort of hardware these phones will need. I mean, it's pretty high-end stuff.
It's going to be high-end stuff. We're talking, you know, they haven't given anything terribly specific yet, but we're talking displays that are at least as good as what Samsung is using right now in the Galaxy S7 and the Galaxy Note. As far as response time and just general quality head tracking stuff that doesn't exist in any phone right now. Samsung gets around it by putting separate head tracking stuff in the actual Gear VR headset itself. But Google wants it all to be contained within the actual phone. So we're going to have tracking hardware that doesn't exist in any phone yet. And a processor that is going to have to be at least a Snapdragon 820. In order to properly function in this environment. The big push there was not just performance, but also something that could be used for extended periods of time without crushing your battery.
New latency stuff in Android N for audio, for video. I mean, Renee, at some point, Apple's got to care a little bit about VR, right?
Well, they've got a team. It's like with many things. They've got a whole team working on it. They've been in some of the headlines. You know, they've hired some really well-known VR experts to do it. It's just always a question of when they enter the market and in right. what way. Because they don't, you know, like the iPhone wasn't distributed the way any other phone was distributed previously. They wanted to do that their own way, and lucky for them, it worked. So the question is, like, is it going to end up being an artificial reality, an enhanced reality that's on the Apple Car windshield? Or is it going to be, you know, something that's built into the phones? It's interesting to see.
I forget who it was. Somebody wrote an editorial about how it's reigniting the spec wars. I'm not quite sure it's going to go that far just because Apple didn't really play that game. But I'm not sure how much, you know, at some point it can't just lag behind all the time anymore.
Well, I'm looking at this picture, like I'm staring at your avatar right now, and it's you wearing Google Glass, and it occurs to me that, like, we're right now at the very, very early, like we're in the worst possible days of VR, because it's the first time it's been productized for regular right. people. So these giant headsets with cables or phones, you know, being held in front of us, but you go 5 years, 10 years ahead, and this stuff's going to be super light, super mobile, it'll last a long time without cables and without batteries. And what do those products look like? Are they contact lenses? Are they regular glasses? Are they, some people I think were doing photon intercept, like a person in the middle attack on the photons coming into your eyes to give you the image. And I think I don't know if that is what Apple is shooting at, or if they're going to miss something by not being in this early generation. But just I've tried the Oculus several times at CES and GDC, but I've never tried the Vive before. I tried it last night for the first time, and you just know that this is going to be a thing. But it's not going to be a thing for everybody until it's not that giant helmet anymore.
Yeah, how and for whom are the two big questions yeah. still. I love it. I have no need for it in my house.
I feel like I'm building on the Iron Man armor from the first movie.
I would love to see Apple, you know, get involved in VR, at least from a design perspective. But I don't know that they're going to be using their phones to do it. Apple has always made a really big deal about the amount of power that their displays consume without sacrificing, visual integrity or anything like that. And as a result, they can do it. The 6S Plus was their first 1080p phone. Which is an incredible display to look at for doing a lot of stuff. But the second you slide a 1080p screen into a virtual reality headset like Cardboard or something like that, it looks awful.
Yeah.
And the phone just wasn't built for that. So expecting it to be is very, very different. The very first thing that would need to happen for Apple to get into smartphone-based VR is a dramatic shift in how they handle display technology. And I just don't see that as a priority for them. They have that they've done really good with their displays up until this point, and shifting just for VR seems out of character.
Quantum dots, Russell. Quantum dots will solve
it. I mean, it could be, yeah. I mean, yeah. It would be really impressive, but I don't know. I'm just not feeling it yet.
Anything else from the past week you guys can think about? Android Wear 2.0, I'm playing with it on my watch. Russell, do you have it on yours?
I do. I have it on the Huawei watch, and it is weird, and I keep forgetting where all the buttons are. And
I'm starting to get a little more used to it.
I can just see through the screen Renee laughing at us because no, it's just this dramatic visual overhaul in how all of this stuff works. And I'm, you know, Google, I don't know, they iterate at a really fascinating pace when it comes to stuff, but sometimes they don't have any stand to just kind of ripping the Band-Aid off and starting over.
But I think we're going to see that this fall. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's what looks like is happening with Android Wear. And I think that it's a good direction for some of the stuff that they're doing, but it's also going to take this small group of people who have already invested in this stuff and really confuse them.
Yeah, I think one of the things is every company, Apple included, Google included, even you know the companies that came out early, Pebble, they sort of made smartphones for our wrists, and it's unclear that that's what we want. And I think that now that they've had a chance to see people using them and sort of prioritize, yeah, notifications, but is it like a smartphone notification? Does it have to be a card? We'll sort of get the second and third generation thinking on that, and that's when it'll start to get exciting.
At some point, Apple's going to invent a watch that looks like a watch, and it's going to be magnificent.
You say that, but I mean, sir, this is the shape of the watch that Princess Leia wore in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, how'd that work?
And Steve Jobs wore it. They beat the rebellion. I mean, they beat the Empire. It worked out great.
When my kid was in the hospital for a broken arm, every doctor we saw was wearing an Apple Watch.
My sister's hospital uses them too. So she works on the ward, and their paging system is Apple push notifications. So she had it on her phone, but like most women's suits, she doesn't have pockets. So it goes in whatever the doctor version of a lab coat is. Mm-hmm. And then it's heavy and swings around as she's trying to run from place to place. So now it's just on her Apple Watch, and they come in and she sees her pages, and then she just goes about her business. And she can even answer calls on it while she's on the ward. So she really likes it.
We didn't talk much about the cars, but there's not a whole lot to say. I mean, you plug in and it just works. I still think the biggest hurdle for Google is keeping the manufacturers from doing something stupid and keeping entire subsets of phones from being able to connect in the first place. Looking at you, Samsung and Marshmallow. But yeah, it looks really cool. They're playing with Snapdragon-powered entire infotainment units. They had it built into a Maserati, which was a little incredible, especially when you sit down and the whole thing goes blank because there was a powerful spike.
But you're shocking, Phil.
Yes, I am. Still really early days for that, but my pet project is still just whatever we can do to get phones out of people's hands is super important.
They're you were with me at CES when we interviewed the vice president of Samsung, and he comes out and he goes, I'm gonna get out of my Tizen car wearing my Tizen watch, walk inside, my Tizen TV will turn on and go to all, like, these companies have these giant unified views of the future, and I don't think it's coming anywhere nearly as fast as they hope.
It's just not how it works. No. I'm using, you know, I'm speaking to you on my Macintosh computer.
Yeah.
Computers. Macintosh's computer. Plurals. Never mind. You know, using an Android device and my OE, my aftermarket, you know, head unit in my car. And there's a Samsung TV next to me here. So, yeah, that's just not how most people live.
We kept talking about writing about multi-platform families. It'd be a fun series.
Yeah, we should. And kids.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff going on with kids now, too.
When do you get them their first phone? When do you let them use... Like Georgia just got the HD Vive, and I think she has a rule that her kids can't spend 10 minutes on it at more than 10 minutes at a time.
She'll do it. I don't have that sort of willpower.
You know, she totally will.
Yeah, she's a better parent than I. Anything else you guys can think of from the past week that you want to talk about before I let you go?
How about the venue? I mean, does anyone else want to see Jerry in a small tank next year?
If you haven't seen the picture, and I'm sorry, I don't know his name, but there's a VR guy, too, who's in a motorized wheelchair and was wearing like three different kinds of VR and had cameras sticking. It was pretty incredible.
He's my spirit animal.
Yeah, I think the venue itself, it was really interesting. I hope they don't, you know, put the kibosh on it just because it wasn't 100% perfect this year. I love the idea of it being outside. It was very much Disneyland. It was hot. The sun is hot. Go figure. The line for me, the harder thing was the sessions were just too small and the lines were long to get into. So you would miss one session waiting and then maybe not even get into the one you were actually trying to get into. For me, that's the bigger thing. That's all fixable.
Yep.
I saw nothing about last week that they cannot fix and do better next year. And I really hope they consider doing it outside. Cause it was a lot more fun than just sitting in Moscone for a week.
Yeah. I think for me. Jerry wants Guns N' Roses to play at the end of the session next year.
If they don't, just put some instruments up there and you know, where's Phil? He should be in the press room, and no, he's on stage.
Awesome.
We can do that. Well, Russell, Jerry, thank you for hanging out for us for a little while.
Thank you for having me.
It's been fun.
We'll do it again sometime. Stay tuned for part two. We've got Mike Wolfson, our developer of the Mobile Nation's Android applications, among other things. Coming up next, he's going to explain all this from a developer standpoint. So hang on, be right back. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Igloo. Igloo is an intranet that you will actually like. You can share news, organize your files, coordinate calendars, and manage projects for your business all in one place. Igloo's latest upgrade is called Viking. It revolves around documents and how you interact with them, gather feedback, and make changes. And it comes with a really sweet Viking helmet. Okay, it should come with a really sweet Viking helmet. They've added the ability to track who's read critical information to keep everyone on the same page. It's like read receipts in your email, but far less annoying. It helps you track whether employees have read and acknowledged policies, signed off on legal agreements, or confirmed completion of training materials, or if they're wearing their Viking helmets. They should really have Viking helmets. So if your company has a legacy intranet that looks like it was built in the 90s, you should give Igloo a try. Sign up for a free trial at igloosoftware.com/android. So we are here with Mike Wolfson. We've had Mike on the podcast before. If you don't know Mike, you should. He's done a few apps you've heard of back in the day. You did the big one that I knew was Epocrates, right?
Yep.
Cool. And now, of course, the Android Central app and all the other Mobile Nations apps. You're responsible for those.
Yes.
Thanks for doing that, by the way.
Wow. It's awesome.
So you were at Google I.O. last week, and I figured the past two podcasts, everybody's heard from us ungrateful journalists enough. Let's actually hear from a developer who was there, and you and I saw each other very briefly. So what was your take on the whole show? When I walked in, I was kind of like, holy crap, this is Disney World. It's great.
Well, I think there were some good points and some bad points. I think the bad point, which you kind of alluded to already, was it was kind of hard to see people. We had even kind of made a point of seeing each other and trying to connect. And it was kind of difficult. Like, I figured I wasn't necessarily going to see everybody I wanted to see, but seemed like there were a lot of people I didn't get to see just by nature of the venue.
Yeah, we've talked about logistics. There was one really good Reddit thread I read from people who were there, and I thought they encapsulated it really well on that. It's hot outside and there's sun and the lines were obviously long for sessions and it was tough for people to get in. So, I mean, obvious logistical issues aside, and I guarantee Google's going to listen to those and try to do better, you know, next year. Did you like the outdoor venue rather than just sitting in Moscone all day?
I think I honestly like Moscone better just for my needs, right? I'm kind of a pasty, pale developer that, you know, wants to stay inside and see stuff. And
is that really that much of a cliche? I don't know that I buy that.
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, you live in a sunny environment. I live in a sunny environment. So I think for us,
we can extrapolate from there to everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the outdoor nature of the venue was not probably as hard. I mean, you know, it's cool. It was cooler there than at home. I loved kind of, we talked before the keynote, and I asked you if you had ever been to an outdoor presentation of any sort, you know, keynote style. You said no.
I don't think I had.
And I don't think I have. I've been to a lot of conferences too, and it worked remarkably well, actually. I think keynote-wise, it was the best one, at least as far as seeing stuff and the logistics of that, I really liked.
I thought so, and I love the amphitheater idea. I mean, it sucked if you were up there in the sun, and we were watching it. Yeah, you were down below us, I assume.
Yeah,
I was. On that lower level?
Yeah, I was closer.
Yeah, I was up in the box seats, and we could turn around to see the sun coming at us. And, you know, I've seen movies, you know, where it's almost like we're vampires. Oh, my God, it's almost here. And then you look up, and there are people in the grass just starting to bake. And that's tough. I really hope they do something about that. But yeah, it's just, I like being outside for that, and it's more open. It's just a little more fun for me, I think. So let's talk about the keynote and some of the stuff they talked about. Now, I mean, your specialty is app development, but obviously the big one is Google Assistant and all this machine learning stuff. And eventually, I mean, that's going to trickle down at some point because it's all sort of related to search and everything else we do. But do you see Assistant as some new giant endeavor from Google? Is it just an extension of Google now and what they're already doing?
It seems kind of like a natural extension, right? And we kind of, you know, we use our, in the Android Central app, we have the app indexing to try to fit into that stuff. So we're, you know, trying to live within that assistant world, but, you know, basically Google wants to be part of everything on the phone and be part of all of our world, you know, including the, you know, Android at home where, you know, basically they want the assistant to be there for us and everything we do for everything we want.
Probably, and then, yeah, Google Home is probably the other big one. I mean, it's obviously their answer to Alexa and something they should have had a long time ago. I like the idea of an appliance. I was just watching the Fireside Chat video finally went up, and somebody was, you know, questioning the appliance and you know, why do we have this thing instead of it just being on our phones? Do you see this as something people are actually going to buy, or is it just going to be another one of those Google products that's out there?
It's a little hard for me to answer that because I will be buying it on day one.
Sure.
You know, I'm not I am a unique case, I should say. Like, you know, if it says Google on there, you know, it's easy for me to justify as a, you know, part of my business, but yep. I'll be signed up day one.
Well, I mean, look at how many people have bought Echo. I mean, it's something like 3 million. So I think it's more a marketing question at this point than, I mean, we know the use case is there. People will use this sort of thing.
Okay. So what you just said is never been a truer statement said that Android at home is more a marketing thing at this point.
Well, yes.
I didn't see it. I don't think anybody saw it more than the clever video that they created on stage. So, you know, obviously, I think they're going to target a, you know, Christmas time release for that. But I think it's a lot further off than kind of the clever video they showed us portrayed.
And I've got a lot of questions about the implementation of multiple accounts, multiple voices. Technologically, it's not that tough from one room to say, go cast this video in another room. But is my TV going to turn on and switch to the right thing because I don't have a brand new TV or because I have a receiver? So yeah, there are hurdles there to be sure. Android N, we didn't get a whole lot of new stuff. It was really interesting from a press perspective. A lot of the bullet points we saw was actually stuff that came out in the first or second developer preview. But now for me, the big thing is we have this release quality candidate beta that I've been using since it came out, actually. And I'm using it full-time. I'm back in the Nexus 6P. I've got it on my Nexus 9. I've got it on the Pixel C. I actually even put it on the Nexus Player just to see what would happen. And it's relatively stable. It's certainly not 100%, and you need to know what you're getting into. But are you playing with this at all yet?
Just like you, I actually just installed it on my daily driver, my Nexus P. And that is something. So I think we're way ahead of the game. We're way ahead of the game at this release in that they really have gotten something out to the public to test. And the beta program obviously was really incredible for this too. This is the first time I participated in just going, signing up on the website and the updates pushed to my phone for N. That was pretty remarkable.
And that system has worked really well. I mean, for better or worse, on one hand, I love it because it makes it so easy. But it also makes it too easy for people who don't necessarily understand that betas are betas.
Well, it's interesting because when the N release first came out, they said, don't put this on your daily driver. And right. I participated in a lot of forums, both on Android Central and in the real world, where people, not developers, were putting it on their primary phones
right.
and arguing that, saying, well, you know, this is a beta, this is what we're supposed to do. And I said, no, don't do that. And on the other hand, I know a lot of developers that installed it on their phone and had lots of problems, and you know, but they of course should expect that. And that, but this one, they say, you know, everybody should have it. So everybody should. And this is kind of our first chance for real people to try it.
Yeah, I think it's stable enough for that. You're still going to have app crashes every now and then. I had a weird one where on a couple devices now, where I guess if you're using Chrome as your internal browser and your app, it just quits working. So like, you know, Twitter wouldn't open any links. Facebook wouldn't open any links. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But it's fun for me to see stuff like multi-window just working, like the Android Central app, which we haven't, you know, gone anywhere near touching for N. And you can play with it, but you can't even upload those yet to Google Play. Like multi-window works great.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it in fact, I have a side-by-side with our mobile website next to it. And it's like, that's an interesting picture right there.
Yeah.
any other features in N that they've started talking about And again, I didn't think there was all that much new stuff. Instant apps is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I talked to them about instant apps. You know, and in the keynote, they said it's going to be a day of work, which translates to 2 weeks of work for normal people. And then after talking to someone in the booth, it requires, you know, quite a bit. Basically, you will just have to re-architect your app into modules that then the Play Store will optimistically download based on, you know, your needs. So we're you need the app indexing stuff and the deep linkings that we have, but you know, it's assuming that you've architected your app into modules that it will take a day, and that's a hard thing to do.
Is this crazy awesome? For don't think of it like a developer necessarily, because you're automatically thinking, oh God, how are we going to do this?
Right.
But for end users, do you think this is, you know, crazy cool or just crazy?
I think there's some use cases for it. I kind of, you know, wonder whether the app experience is all that much better than a web experience, whether going to all this effort is really going to be worth it for the end user, right? If you're just trying to complete a transaction or, you know, order something, I think it'll be a while before, even if we did have our app architected, this is kind of like everything, you know, I like to wait a little bit because, you know, we can be sure that there are gremlins ahead.
Patience is prudent for this stuff. And then we also have Android apps on Chrome OS, which is kind of a huge deal. And that, I've talked about this before, that presents a really interesting problem for me. Do I want somebody to open up the Android Central app in Chrome OS, which right now we're not monetizing in any way?
Right.
Or do I want you to go to the website, which is a different experience, in some ways worse, in some ways better. But that we also, you know, have ads on and make money on. It's going to be interesting.
And I wonder which of those really is a better experience for the user, right? Because, you know, we're creating a mobile app that's designed to run on a mobile phone, not designed to run in a browser where we're creating a web page. And, you know, well, in our case, there's no ads in the app, so that's a good thing. But, you know, the UI paradigms are different, so hard to know.
It's going to be fun to watch, yeah. On the other hand, we finally get good Instagram on browsers, maybe. So there's that.
One thing we know is that it seems to flip-flop. Every year we hear either, you know, Chrome is going to have web apps that are going to replace mobile apps. And this year we actually got mobile apps that are going to replace the web pages. So next year it'll probably flip back the other way.
What about Android Auto? Did you get out there to look at that any? That's a little far afield.
I did a little. It's pretty far afield for us. You know, I looked at the big dashboard they had with the 15-inch display. But there's not a lot of developer integration points for Android Auto. It's pretty limited. Basically, all we could do is play our podcast through there.
Sure. And we can do that now on, you know, apps like Google Play Music and Pocket Casts, and that works very well. But it's been really interesting for me to see how they've started building all this stuff into core Android. Android Auto is in you know, it's being cooked into AOSP itself and all these hooks for Chrome OS. And it feels like, I worry about it getting bloated, but it certainly doesn't seem like that.
So the nice thing is, because they're integrating all these things, it kind of, you get a lot of these things automatically. If you, you know, use their media buttons, then it allows you to cast, to play on Android TV and Auto. So they're kind of integrating all this stuff in the core OS, which means that as a developer, it kind of just comes along for free, which is obviously good for us. For the Android Central app, we want to be everywhere and on everything, obviously, that we can.
Does it make the job of a developer easy or just easier?
It depends, right? With more complexity comes more responsibility. Stuff doesn't always work like it's supposed to. And
right.
So it depends.
What else did we see there? What did we miss? Was there anything?
From the developer standpoint, the really exciting thing is this new constraint layout, which is basically new UI builder.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And that will really, really change Android quite a bit, because one of the most biggest problems with performant apps, slow apps, is ineffective UI, where they're using making really complicated user interfaces that have a lot of challenges for the Android OS to, you know, render. And the this constraint layout is designed to make that all smoother and create really fast and really performant UI. So it's
not just going to help you design the app, but it's going to help the app and the system, you know, as it's rendering all these transitions, whether it's doing it, you know, now or later, or really make that work as smoothly as possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the intention of it, is to create these really fast layouts.
Yeah, like I'm watching it and it's sort of drag and drop a little bit. And then he's like, well, all you have to do is click here and here. And okay, there's a lot going on. But I could get it, and you could see just how powerful it was. And you see the previews of the transitions, and especially with material design now, such a big deal. And it's like you don't have to go and hunt down, all right, well, here's what this is going to – you can see it right there in front of you. And that just looked like a huge deal and is really going to, I think, improve sort of the next generation of apps.
Yeah, so two things related to what you just said. It's really fun to use. They have all these really nice animations, and you're kind of just dragging and dropping, pulling things around. So it's fun tool to use, but also it's an easy tool to use. So there's a few things. They definitely are targeting designers to use this to generate their layouts. And that's kind of unique, right? Because in our current world, where it's all XML designers, you know, it's hard to understand. And also they're targeting exporting from some of the different tools directly into this container layout. So designers can use the tools they're used to, export into Android, and then tweak or, you know, work with the developer. So it's a really big transition to Android. And it's available to work on all versions of Android, you know, using their support live. So it's a tool people are really going to enjoy. And it's one of those things that's the future.
Allo and Duo. So another messaging app, and then video calling, which you and I are using Hangouts right now. Straight up, straight down, Hangouts live or die.
I mean, they're going to live on forever because they have a base and they definitely are not going to deprecate Hangouts or get rid of it. Ron Amato told me that, that he asked that question. So I think
that's the story until it's not. I'm on the other side of that coin. I think Hangouts, you know, it's not going anywhere anytime soon, but I think at some point they will absolutely be like, all right, you know what? That's been fun.
Allo doesn't necessarily excite me. It's Google listening to my conversations, and I can make, you know, when they were showing the text, you can make the text bigger or smaller as their killer feature. It was almost a joke to me.
I thought that's
you know, I'm supposed to be excited about that.
Duo got me just because and that sort of presentation is always genius. You bring 5,000 to 7,000 people away from home and show them a way to talk to their kids. That looks great.
Yeah.
So we all go out of there saying, this is the best thing ever. And I am honestly excited about it because I need some good cross-platform way, because my wife's on iOS and my kids will use whatever's laying around. So I like the idea. We'll just have to see. Because again, like so much at this I/O, right? It was like, well, later this year. Or actually this one's the summer, I guess, but still later.
Yeah. That was the whole keynote, right? We got all this cool stuff, but none of it's ready yet.
Yeah. Eventually we will have all this cool stuff. VR, kind of the same way. You know, they're calling it Daydream.
Again, there was no VR booths or no, like, opportunity to go try out VR. Even in years past, they had the YouTube area where you could look at some of the 3D videos or, you know, cardboard. There was no VR booth, which is kind of surprising to me.
It's early, but yeah, it's, here's a big part of our keynote that, you know, we're going to take up a chunk of time and not show you anything later, eventually.
Yeah. That was hard. That was hard. You know, even for press, if you guys didn't see the stuff, I could see that maybe
sure.
It's not ready for the masses, but.
I'm just flipping back through all our stories. See if, yeah, I mean, is there anyone? Oh, Firebase. Firebase is a huge deal for you. Tough for me to explain.
But I think it's just Place Services rebranded into Firebase.
Is it kind of pulling it all together, though? I mean, instead of living in different places, it'll all be just one-stop hub for all this back-end stuff?
We hope. I don't know what they said about Place Services, if that's going away or not. I guess I didn't get the answer to that, but this is kind of like what we've been talking about before. Allo sure. Replacing Hangouts, container layout replacing relative layout, etc. We shall see.
So if you had to pick one thing from last week that really stood out for you and made you excited, what would it be?
Oh, on a technology level, probably the constraint layout. That's pretty, mm-hmm. pretty neat thing. You know, the thing that was great about I/O was hanging out with people. Sure. Couldn't get into sessions or standing in line. Was a great time to network with people. And so the one thing that always stands out for I/O is hanging out with the with the people.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's the same for us too. Both with people who do what I do and seeing, you know, random developers that, you know, and I felt bad, you know, so many, I didn't get to see, you know, the Shifty Jelly guys. I really wanted to get to go say hi to, and especially the guys who come from, you know, other side of the world, men and women, excuse me.
Right.
Just meeting so many people from all over the place, some of whom make your favorite apps, some of whom know who you are. And yeah, absolutely. A lot of fun. Do you think they're going to do it at Shoreline next year or go back into the city?
I think they'll go back into the city. It's hard to say. You know, maybe if we know what to expect, it might be different. I think there was probably a lot of expense paid to put into to create those tents and sure. have all that infrastructure created. You'd think that money could be better spent on other things.
How do you think it compared to last year? Because last year, and I talked to some of the PR people about this, it was definitely more of a developer event compared to like a consumer announcement event that, oh, by the way, has sessions. And they scaled it down. They took it out of some of the rooms in Moscone. So the sessions themselves were smaller last year as well.
Right.
A little harder to get into. Do you think that's the right way to do it? And we maybe just need to, you know, change our expectations a little bit?
Maybe. I mean, maybe the point of this is that they have a place to record videos and the people that are there are there to hang out with each other. That's kind of...
And the videos are great. I mean, I've been watching videos since I got home.
Yep, agreed. And let's be honest, most of those things are better as videos where you can
sure.
hit pause or, it's some of those topics are very technically intense and hard to concentrate on, so...
I think if they do it outside again next year, I mean, just two words would make it so much easier. Strategic kegerators.
Yeah, no doubt. Just
place them around the vent, the venue and let us go about our business. That would be a bad idea.
Yeah.
A great idea.
Yes.
Then the Android barbecue guys would have something to say about it, I think.
So one last thing we might want to talk about is
sure.
No giveaways this year for the first time ever.
I'm okay with that just because now, I mean, I'm not a developer. On the other hand, I didn't spend, you know, several thousand dollars to go to this thing, but I'm okay with that kind of on principle because it seemed like at least in the noise, you know, that I hear for a lot of people, that was the reason to go to this stuff, especially if you were, you know, kind of close to the city and all you had to do was show up or could get a cheap ticket. So I'm okay with it from that perspective. But on the other hand, if Chrome OS is this big a deal and this much stuff coming from Chrome OS, you know, give people some Chromebooks.
Yeah. I'm okay with it too. And I think it's probably great to set the precedence that there are no giveaways at I/O so that it's kind of a surprise when they do. You know, Google mm-hmm. doesn't give away stuff just out of the goodness of their heart. They give away stuff sure. because they want the developers to use it. I'm kind of glad. And we saw the writing on the wall for years. But it was kind of interesting. Everybody was kind of looking over their shoulder, you know, wondering, are we going to get anything?
Yeah, and we've seen other, I think Microsoft cut back on that as well. And so I get it. I think it makes sense, but... Maybe this year it was a little tougher just because of all the other logistical problems. They were, you know, everybody's kind of hoping Google would throw them a bone at the end of the week.
Right. I kind of thought that if they did that, people would forget about the logistical problems. And if they didn't right. give something away, that people would probably be pretty vocal. And
interesting that you brought it up, though. I don't think we talked about it at all in our podcast last week. We might have, but it's less of a big deal for us, I think.
And honestly, for me personally, it's not that big a deal because I sure. run an independent business where I buy lots of hardware anyway. So, and I think I like it. That way people are motivated to come for the right reasons, and they definitely set a precedent. So now we'll be surprised yeah. and excited if, you know, there is a reason for them to give us hardware at some point.
Yeah, and other than home, which is still not quite vaporware, I guess. I mean, we'll have a big hardware event later this year. So, I mean, we'll have new Nexus devices, and that'll probably be when Home comes out.
Definitely.
So we have that to look forward to.
Yep.
Well, Mike, thank you for joining us, and we will absolutely do this again sometime.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a bunch, Phil.